Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
It is indeed. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Welcome and welcome back. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. And the lyrics just keep, the country music lyrics just keep pouring in. Got the Fairlane up on blocks, holes in all our socks. 224 texter. I see her every once in a while. I lower my head. She gives me a smile. Tells me I'm looking real good. I wish I could burn her like firewood. Whoa! There's a man with an issue.
A little aggressive.
847, can't beat, quote, get your tongue out of my mouth because I'm kissing you goodbye. I love country music lyrics. 708 texter, pink flamingos in the front yard, picture window with a view of Walmart. 708 texter, you absolutely must listen to Lifestyles of the Not So Rich and Famous. All right, you go look that up, Tyler. I don't know who did that. I know it's not Robin. Okay, this is a meeting of the Wake and Bake Club, and I gotta tell you, guess who's getting into the pot game, brother?
Smoke weed every day.
Hulk Hogan has endured 28 surgeries over the last decade after years of wrestling, and says, I always joked that I didn't get the memo that this stuff was fake. And after the 10 back surgeries and 2 knees and 2 hips, it's a situation, you do get hurt out there all the time. He was telling TMZ Sports TV show. But he says, I feel better than I've ever felt at 69 years old. I feel like I'm 25 again. He's talking about physical ailments and just making a comeback to feeling like a human being. Quote, it definitely helped me. And he's talking about THC, and he's talking about weed, and he's talking about CBD. Tylenol, Advil, Aleve wasn't working for me. As I moved away from that and got into the CBD world, it really changed the game from my sleep to the inflammation, the way my wrists and my joints hurt. Across the board, it helped me with my health. So much so that Hulk Hogan, brother,
smoke weed every day,
is launching his own brand with a company behind Mike Tyson's 2.0 and Ric Flair's Ric Flair Drip. Company is called Karma Hold Co. Quote, when I saw what Rick and Mike were doing, I instantly wanted to get on that team because you use CBD for energy, for sleep, for fitness. It just made sense. This is Hulk Hogan, and he's getting into his partner, Chad Bronstein, Karma's president, was also on the show, the TMZ sports show, that the health and wellness brand that Hulk Hogan will be part of will feature not just CBD and THC, but also functional mushrooms, which sounds like a group at Lollapalooza or Riot Fest or Pitchfork. So we heard that from Hulk Hogan. Now we hear this from a former Minnesota governor, but you know him better as Jesse the Body Ventura. Minnesota, on Tuesday, became the 23rd state to legalize weed for recreational purposes. Governor Tim Walz put a signature on the bill. Adults 21 and over can carry up to 2 ounces in public and possess up to 2 pounds at home. And that starts August 1st. Jesse the Body Ventura, we were always told everything was here for us to use. Now in Minnesota, we'll be able to use this plant, said Jesse Ventura's Marijuana Manifesto author. He's credited pot with stopping his wife's seizure condition. After years of prohibition, he was quoted as saying, "We didn't want any families to go through what the First Lady and I went through." Said the pro wrestler turned governor who was in office from 1999 until 2003. I'll end this by saying, this was pointed out to me by Joey Ice, the former Frozen guy in my Trader Joe's, because it involves a wrestler ending his laudatory comments about Minnesota legalizing pot. Jimi Hendrix is looking down on Minnesota and smiling. Yeah, purple haze. Indeed. And I did had a chance to interview Jesse Ventura, and he was spectacular. Jesse Ventura was the governor of Minnesota. He ran on the Libertarian, and everybody laughed at him, and there he was governor. And he told this reflects on, because what the Bears are trying to do, put their hand out here. We want this. We're going to dictate this. We want this. We don't want to pay this much money. Jesse Ventura told the Twins no. The Twins wanted a new ballpark. No. Now, Jesse Ventura fought for the Twins not to be contracted. I got news for you. There was a time 20 years ago, 22 years ago, where MLB was going to contract, was going to pay teams to go away. The 3M, Montreal, Minnesota, and Milwaukee. They're going to pay them to go away. We're going to contract you. We're going to fold. And Jesse Ventura fought for, he fought for the Twins. He fought against MLB. Keep them. They're going to stay here. We're going to find a way to do it. A lot of things had to happen for baseball to get right, and there were work stoppages, and there were things that bought him time. But the Twins wanted a new ballpark and just said, no, we're not doing that. You're not getting public money for that. Go to your league. Get it from your league. And then the league says, well, we'll contract you. Just says, no, you can't do that. You don't want to do that. But he said, we need, among other things, we need a light rail in Minnesota. We need it here. And that's more important than giving the Twins a baseball stadium. I would love Jesse Ventura to be the governor here or the mayor of Arlington Heights. No, Kevin Warren, no. You're not getting that. Now what? What's next? You going to give us that Naperville clown show again? How about Rockford? Yeah, right. Hold your breath until you're turning blue. Anyways, Jesse was... And at the time, somewhere in the early 2000s, 2002, 3, 4, 5, after he'd done that, he started looking like Captain Jack Sparrow's uncle, the crazy uncle, the loud uncle. He looked like he was the model for Johnny Depp's Pirates of the Caribbean character. He had the bohemian, the beard with the four, I don't even know what you call them, but we would have been a Fu Manchu, but there were four things hanging. They had like a stone in them. Jesse Ventura was great. I have no idea if this is legit or not or wrestling stuff, but when I told Tyler Buterbaugh, my first, you know, making his first and last appearance as producer around here. And I said, we got WEED. We got wrestlers talking about pot. Hulk Hogan and Jesse Ventura. He goes, oh, you got to hear this. I found this. So we're all going to hear this. Tyler?
Hey, this is Jesse the Nobody Ventura. I'm the biggest in the wrestling business.
Whoa.
Because I'm a coward.
And I don't
but he knows in the dressing room that all I did was talk about being in the Navy SEALs, but I'm really a coward. And I only went to Japan one time, and I couldn't take it because it was too rough on me. But, you know, I smoked a lot of pot in the governor's mansion, and then the next thing I knew, I was booted out of my ear, and I'm Jesse the Nobody Ventura, and even I was scared of Greg Gagne. What's up?
That was Hulk Hogan, right? Share with the class what that was. Tyler.
Yeah, that was Hulk Hogan. He was on an interview.
And he's on an interview, and was it legit? Do you think it was legit? Where did you get that?
I literally just looked up Hulk Hogan and Ventura on YouTube, and it's like one of the first things that popped up. This was like 4 months ago. He was on an interview.
This is recent.
Oh, yeah, this is very, very recent.
This is not like that. So is there an AARP match that they're going to be in? Is this, are they ginning it up, or is there genuine dislike? See, I don't know. We should have, really, we need Lawrence. Lawrence would be here. He knows all of the wrestlings, what's legit, what's not, all the wrestling feuds, friendships, turning heel, and all of the things that are supposedly true or not, but what they want you to believe and the act. So I don't know. Is that a legitimate feud?
I'm going to have to see. I'm going to look up to see if there's an actual feud because, yeah, it was on the Bubba Army podcast from 7 months ago.
Bubba Army. Says credibility like that. Okay. So that was the WB Globe. We got Hulk Hogan. We got Jesse Ventura. And then we got Hulk Hogan imitating Jesse Ventura. I love Jesse. I thought it was great. And when I think about the Bears doing this now, and then they met with or had a phone call or they did whatever kind of dance they feel they have to do, whatever kind of dance the new mayor feels he has to do to act like the Bears. It's possible the Bears don't leave Soldier Field. It's possible. Because they could Bears this up. They've been known to do this. And when you're, okay, you know what? Naperville looking pretty good out there. Really? You think anybody believes that? Nobody in Arlington Heights. They held a public meeting this week, and questions were asked by residents, and it was sponsored by a group that desperately wants the Bears. I think it's called Touchdown Arlington. They desperately want the Bears. And the Bears want things their way. Hi, we don't want to pay. We don't want to pay all the taxes. We want cost certainty. We want a limit on this. But we think this is really going to be a massive economic boom. Really? Then why won't you pay taxes on it? Why don't you want to do that? If it's all that you think it's going to be, why not? I don't want to see the legislature cave in. You got a business. You develop, and I'm with the Bears, the argument that the fact that you have this land, but it's not going to produce anything, that the value of it is lower because you're not able to profit off it. I'd be convinced you could lower that. You could lower the property tax assessment. But you still bought it with, you paid $197,000, $197 million for it, and you said, because this is going to be something. But right now, it's not. It won't be for a couple years. Okay. But it still has value for being what it is, even if the Bears were to resell it, however that was going to happen. And I do believe that they're going to resell part of this. They're going to sell off pieces of it. What the Bears really want is a stadium and a sports book. And whatever else they can own benignly, I mean, sports book ideally should just, or casino, whatever they're going to get, should sort of run its on. They'll just be, hi, we're here. The Bears Casino is here, and they'll get paid a lot of money for being the Bears. That's what they want. Make money in your sleep. That's the goal. I don't think they want to start becoming office landlords. I don't think they want to become townhome or condo developers. They'll be happy to sell you that part of it and profit off that. But I'm with the Bears saying we're not going to turn a profit on this thing. We don't have any way to get income on this property now. So our property taxes should not be $95 million, which is still half of what they paid. And whatever Fritz Kagi is using is assessing it. He's using and assessing it, and there you go. But if it's going to be all you think it's going to be, all you say it's going to be, and you pay what you should. That's the way property taxes work. You get taxed on the value of your property and what it's producing. We're going to take a break. We will talk some Cubs. Look at that. While you were sleeping, they did something good. We'll talk about that with Michael Cirami of Bleacher Nation. We are Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Giants down to their last strike, the 1-2. Called strike three, and the Cubs win the ball game. Albert Alzolay strikes out Brandon Crawford looking. And this ball game is over, and the Cubs have beaten the Giants by a score of 3-2.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Highlight courtesy of us. No, not me. I'm not Pat Hughes. But the score, heard it last night. While you were sleeping, Albert Alzolay was finishing off a dandy outing. Cubs beat the Giants. And boy, that was that strike three. Brandon stood there and looked at, oh, yeah, I'm out. Yeah, I'm definitely out. I'm leaving. See you later. Welcome and welcome back. We're going to go back to the score hotline. It's presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Welcome to the show, Michael Cirami of Bleacher Nation. Michael, thanks for taking time out today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on at 1:20, the time baseball should be played.
Yeah, see, there you go. It's a very
9:15 garbage.
Very Cub-like thing. So here you are at 1:20, and we might as well start with what could Marcus Stroman bring in a trade?
It's a little complicated. I'm guessing you've seen earlier today he was out there talking about how he tried to approach the Cubs for a possible extension on multiple occasions, but the Cubs were so far reportedly not interested. For what it's worth, that sort of tracks with what I would assume. But also, to give a little bit of fairness to both sides here, it's pretty easy for a player to go seek an extension when he's having the best year of his career. And Marcus Stroman right now is having pretty close to, if not definitely, the best year of his career. He's got great strikeout rate for him, that super elite ground ball rate, and that will likely mean that when the trade deadline comes around, if the Cubs don't go on a miraculous run here, which I don't expect, that he would fetch a good amount in trade. Starting pitching and pitching in general is always highly sought after. The sort of confounding issue here with Stroman, though, why he might get a little bit less than people might otherwise anticipate is his opt-out at the end of the season. That complicates matters. If he stays healthy and productive, of course he'll opt out, and that would make things a little bit easier. But if he gets hurt or if he suddenly becomes extremely unproductive, he might look at that you know, $20 million or so for 2024 and say, I want to stay in. And that might create a little bit of an imbalance on finding value at the trade deadline. And the same goes for Drew Smyly, for what that's worth. And that's why I want Cubs fans, that anyone that's on the edge of, like, I definitely want to trade Stroman, to think twice, because the return might not match the performance on the field, which has been truly, you know, phenomenal, leading the league in quality starts. And again, that ground ball rate is absolutely sky high, elite levels.
Michael Cirami is my guest. He's from Bleacher Nation. We're talking Cubs here. Stroman last night, 6 2/3, 6 hits, 2 runs, 4 walks, 5 strikeouts, a 2.42 ERA. And the thing with the Cubs is, well, we've already seen, we saw last weekend when they faced Darvish, they seemed to like trading their number one pitcher, their Cy Young candidate. And we're not sure of the reason. Well, I guess we know the reason. They traded Darvish. So maybe you tell me, you follow this. I'm still angry about that, because I thought, they quit in December. Hey, Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. We're quitting baseball. We're trading Darvish for 4 guys who need work permits. You know, they're not even 16. And one of the things that was whispered, and this is why it's, I'm still angry about this, when they quit in 2020, that one of the things that was whispered was, Yu Darvish is on a he's halfway through a 6-year contract, and we all know these contracts aren't worthwhile. You're not getting what you paid for on the back end. So he pitched 3 years for the Cubs. He's in his third year with San Diego. So his Cubs ERA was 3.60. His Padres ERA is 3.73 after he just shoved it up the Cubs giggy last week. His Cubs fielder independent pitching, I mean what he can control, for the Cubs it was 3.77. For the Padres, it's 3.61. So he's gotten better. His whip, well, with the Cubs was 1.106. His whip with the Padres is 1.04. He's gotten better in a lot of ways. And this just makes me angry, and seems to be, if they're talking about whatever they might do with Stroman, because you get rid of him, you're going to have to go find another Stroman, somebody like that. Do you hold similar grudges? Am I being ridiculous here? Am I, like, need to get over it?
Well, I mean, you're not wrong on the sentiment, for sure. And I can't throw stones. I was tweeting about this yesterday, insofar as I don't necessarily like that we give Jed Hoyer a little bit of credit for that deal, because we say things like, well, the reason for that deal at the time is because the Cubs and everyone in baseball didn't know if there was going to be any attendance, you know, in the following season. And who knows what's going to happen with revenue. And we're lucky that we got rid of Darvish at all. But even if you could let Jed Hoyer off the hook for that, well, then you have to stick the bill at, you know, Tom Ricketts' feet, and together they make up the Cubs. And so I'm not letting anybody off the hook. Also complicating matters for making you angry, and, you know, 2 years later, is there's really only one player from that trade, Owen Casey, who's, you know, emerged as anything notable. And the other three guys, you know, while still around, are not quite playing up to anything that I think they would have projected at the time. So it is a bit of a bummer. It is frustrating. The Cubs still haven't reaped the benefits of that trade 2+ years later. And yeah, sure, they're sort of going down a similar. Well, and I'll say the Padres gave Darvish another 6-year deal. So any sense of, you know, expiring value on Darvish was incorrectly, you know, evaluated, because literally they gave him more money, another 6-year deal. So I am with you there, and it does sort of feel that way with Stroman. And in a lot of ways, you know, although they're very different pitchers, they both sort of figure to age well. Darvish, because of his unique ability to throw every single pitch that has ever been invented, and Marcus Stroman for his unique athleticism and attention to his work ethic and attention to detail and his mindfulness. He's a guy that you sort of do say, well, you know what? This is a guy that I think could age well. And if there's any sort of I don't know, light at the end of this tunnel, I will say that for whatever it's worth, the Nico Hoerner and Ian Happ extensions both seemed dead on arrival at a certain point, especially Ian Happ, which, you know, once the season started, we thought that was it, it's over. And then they got it done. So perhaps the Cubs have their method of negotiation, and that includes these silent dead periods where we think there's no chance at a deal, and eventually they come through. I think that it would be the difference, you know, with trading Darvish at the time they did and trying to trade Stroman now is that you need Stroman next year. Drew Smyly can opt out, and if he isn't extended, he probably will. He's having a great season. Kyle Hendricks can be a free agent. Hayden Wesneski has not yet proven capable of sticking in the rotation. I still think he's got a good future, but the point is the Cubs are not overwhelming with starting pitching options, but they do have Dansby Swanson, Ian Happ, Seiya Suzuki, Nico Horner, guys that are ready to contribute right now. So you're going to want and need a guy like Stroman to anchor your rotation, especially because at a minimum, he's a guy that can eat innings, and he's obviously so much more than that, but he can cover innings for you. So I do hope the Cubs seriously consider extending him. I do think there's a chance. Precedent shows that it's not always done out in public. And Marcus Stroman, by contrast, is a very out in public type of player. So there's a little bit of an imbalance there, but maybe they'll get something done. And even better, how about the Cubs rattle off 10 wins in a row and we don't have to talk about this at all?
Okay. All right. Welcome to the Wake and Bake Show. Terrific. Michael Cirami is my guest. Bleacher Nation is where you can find his work and editorship. And we're talking Cubs baseball on the score. So Nick Medical is back. And I mean, where are they with, if they've got to bring him back, if Miles Mastroboni wasn't the answer, and I didn't even know what the question was at that point, why, what are you waiting for to add to this lineup? It's not a secret to anyone. And whatever you did with Dansby Swanson, it's been wonderful. He is such an ideal player in so many ways, an ideal human, an ideal teammate, and all of that. But somebody, you know, has got to hit like Schwarber, right?
So was there a question in there about Nick Madrigal?
Or? Yeah, but it just, you know, when I was using that, if you're bringing him back, he's not the answer. I don't know what the question is. Same thing with Miles Mastroboni. Right. And if you're going to do more than just get to 500, if you're going to compete, which I think you owe the fans, how does that lineup?
How does that square?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No, I hear you. I mean, listen, Nick Madrigal was not anyone that's under the impression that he was brought back because, you know, of what he did at Iowa, which, I mean, to be fair, yeah, sure, he crushed AAA pitching. He absolutely should have crushed AAA pitching. I'm pretty confident that if Patrick Wisdom went down to AAA, he would crush AAA pitching. Chris Morrell, who's struggling right now, crushed AAA pitching. Matt Mervis, who is struggling right now, hitting the ball hard but struggling, crushed AAA pitching. There's obviously a difference. So that's not the reason they brought him back up. Sadly, the reason is what else are they going to do? Patrick Wisdom is defensively, he's fine at third base, but he has not been the answer offensively, even against lefties, for a very long stretch now. Chris Morrell, his defense is suspect enough at third base to make the Cubs uncomfortable. Gambling on the bat, bouncing back, which, again, for people that haven't been paying attention, has been ice cold for a while. Miles Mastroboni is not getting anybody's love letters in Chicagoland. No one wants to see him start. So at a certain point, you come back to Nick Madrigal, and it's not about how he's going to help the Cubs. It's what else is there to lose? They literally can't do worse at the position, and they are already, you know, 9 games under 500. At a minimum, you need to see and give him every opportunity to really drive the nail home that he either is going to be a guy that can contribute to this team long term or he isn't, because they cannot plan to count on him or try it again as an experiment next year. They need to know by the end of this year if any of these guys are going to be answers. And the only way to do that is to give him, you know, opportunities. So when he does go down to AAA Iowa and rake, which he did, I want to give him credit, and everybody else at the big league level is doing nothing, well, you're a 26-year-old former first-round top five pick. Let's go. Here's your opportunity. Play every day. If you can't do it, you can't do it. But we can't rely on, well, he didn't get the playing time, because that is the worst excuse. You know, it's sometimes relevant, but a lot of times it's not. So it's like, that's within our control is playing time. So fine, Nick, go out there, play every day. His defensive third looked a lot better than I think any of us thought it would have, especially the arm, which, you know, by all accounts is not strong, but it's looked good at third. He's made the plays. Let's see what you got. Because second and short are locked up for the foreseeable future. You're not going to get playing time there. So it's got to be third base. And I'm at least curious because, again, there's really not much to lose, which is sad.
Do you have you seen any update, any legitimate number? I'm sorry, any legitimate ETA for Bellinger?
Well, you know, the good news is he's heading out to Arizona to play some center field. So I don't think there's been any actual date put on that, but I don't think they'd have him out there playing in the rookie league without, you know, a sense of his comeback being imminent. And, you know, Mike Tauchman has filled in admirably. It's been great to have him. He's also a lefty. He's played hard. His, you know, he's not Cody Bellinger at the plate or in center field, but he's sustained. But, you know, again, he's not Cody Bellinger, so we do need him back. And then, you know, making it, you know, again, once again, complicating things is you kind of want Bellinger back as soon as possible, not only to see if he can maybe help the Cubs right the ship, but probably more likely because as a one-year rental player, he's a pretty ideal trade ship. He's a, you know, plus defensive center fielder who could play first base and is hitting the ball as well as he has since he was an MVP. So, yeah, the Cubs need him back soon. The positive news is that he is going out to play, and he's, you know, he's going to be running and hitting and fielding. So I can't imagine it will take much longer, but I don't have any actual update to provide.
Michael Cirami is my guest. Bleacher Nation is the bleachernation.com. You can find his stuff there. And we're talking Cubs here on The Score. So Alzolay and Leiter, and what do you believe? What do you believe will hold? And what do you think going forward? How does that line up?
Yeah, I think Everett Alzolay is really demonstrating why he needs to be considered probably the most trustworthy arm in the pen, and whether or not the Cubs anoint him as, you know, the quote unquote closer, he should get the most high leverage spots. Most of the time that'll be save opportunities in the ninth. But, you know, if the Cubs are up a run and it's the eighth inning and the middle of the lineup or top of the lineup is coming up, you might see him then. I do think he's going to sort of emerge as that guy this year, which is huge. And the big development there has been his ability to get lefties out, which was a big problem for him, especially when he's a starter, but even after he transformed into a reliever. So if he can keep on this track, I think the Cubs have maybe found something really useful there. Mark Leiter Jr. has been, you know, fantastic most of the season. And of course, in the last couple of weeks, he's given up a couple of really poorly timed bad outings that have led to losses. But he's been good, and he's probably not a guy that the Cubs will keep past the deadline if they're out of it. Again, as they are, you know, currently on trajectory to be, I think what Mark Leiter Jr. is one of those guys that could be traded. So for now, I think you'll see him in the eighth inning. And it's, you know, it's pretty much those two guys and Julian Merriweather are the circle of trust for David Ross at the moment. And, you know, it's a bummer because, you would love for these sort of emergency, like, you know, guys like Julian Merriweather, Abbott Alzolay, Mark Leiter Jr., if they were to have emerged alongside the core relievers, which would have been Keegan Thompson, Brad Boxberger, Michael Fulmer, suddenly you're looking at a bullpen with six guys that you're feeling really good about. Those latter three guys that I mentioned, they were supposed to be the foundation of this bullpen that provided cover for David Ross to figure out which of his other relievers are going to have good years. Unfortunately, those three imploded along with everybody else besides those three players. So you were left with a lot of, you know, winnable games being lost and a lot of time before we figured out Albert Alzolay is the guy for the ninth inning and so on. So it's been nothing but a struggle for the Cubs bullpen this year. And, you know, unfortunately, I don't know if there's much help on the way. There's a few more arms at AAA. The Cubs have also converted a couple of other starting pitching prospects into relievers, theoretically with an eye on fast-tracking their deployment to the big leagues as relievers to sort of expose them to big league batters and continue their development while also contributing. So there is some help, but it's not going to be significant or anything that anyone should count on. It would only be pleasant surprises from here on out. So until something changes, Everett Alzolay, you get the ninth. Mark Leiter Jr., Julian Merriweather, you guys are other high leverage moments in the seventh and eighth and whenever the game's on the line.
Michael, I appreciate your time. Thanks for the insight. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. That's Michael Cirami, Bleacher Nation. talking Cubs here on Score. It's just fits and spurts the way this stuff gets worked out, trying to get worked. Bullpens turn over by half, even on good teams, every season. That's just the way it goes. You got to expect it. And, okay, if you come out of this, if your bullpen story is this year is Alzolay's our guy, then that's, I guess, that's a worthwhile season. That's a worthwhile, okay, we know who can, we know who the back end is. We knew who the ninth, we know who the ninth inning guy is. That's what we're going to do. At least that's something. That shows progress where they had been able to put together bullpens pretty well, pretty respectably, give the manager legitimate options. But it was, there was, we went through a lot of this season where David Ross looked like the village idiot. Like, what are you doing that? Well, no, that guy. This guy's bad. This guy's hurt. This guy's hurt while being bad. And, oh. So, if it's Alzolay in a season where you should expect nothing, actually, you should expect a lot from a team in a big market. You should expect a lot more than you're getting from a team in a big market with a well-heeled owner. You should expect, now, if the guys don't perform, they don't perform, but you should expect more. You should be getting more. But then you got to dial it down. Okay, we come out of this, we got a closer. All right, I guess. At least we know where the bullpen ends. If we can get to that point, if we can get enough arms to get to that point, the bullpen's turnover by half. Every year, even on good teams. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we have, before we go, the cultural zeitgeist. Look, golf brought the worst thing you could see this week. The BGA, the Bonesaw Golf Association. But golf also gave me one of the best things I saw this week. And also, it's the anniversary of, as we review where my rap name voting is, because we have a web poll going. The nexus of rap and baseball. And we need to share that. We need to hand down this lore to the next generation. Because we're givers here. We're pleasers, not teasers here. So that's what we're going to do. And you can't touch this. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Can't touch this. Touch this.
Yeah.
Can't touch this. My music hits me so hard. Makes me say, oh my Lord, thank you for blessing me. What am I to run and do?
Can't touch this. Stanley Burrell. Welcome and welcome back. Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score, cultural zeitgeist portion. Why are we playing that, Tyler Buterbaugh?
Because today is his anniversary of when the song came out.
It was when the album, well, actually is the anniversary of when the album.
Yes, the whole album of Please Hammer, Don't Hurt Them.
Reached number one. Only the second rap album ever to reach number one in the United States. This happened in 1990. You can't touch this. MC Hammer. The story of MC Hammer is a sports story. I don't know if you know this. I don't know if our audience out there knows this, but I feel compelled to hand down this lore because MC Hammer is a baseball story. The rapper of the You Can't Touch This, Too Legit to Quit, baseball story. Because as an 11-year-old kid, He'd be doing splits and all kinds of activities in the hanging out in Oakland Coliseum parking lot. And he was noticed by Charlie Finley, the eccentric owner of the A's, who also had offices in Chicago. Charlie Finley noticed him, and the players noticed him, and the players decided he had a resemblance to Henry Aaron. You know what Henry Aaron's nickname?
I don't believe so.
The Hammer.
Ah.
Hammer and Henry Aaron, Hammer and Hank Aaron, Hammer. So, Finley took a liking to him. The players were amused by this 11-year-old kid, 12-year-old kid, Stanley Burrell. And Stanley Burrell was made the vice president of the A's. He was basically Finley's spy. He was called Hammer, and he was Finley's spy, and then they figured it out. Then the players figured it out, because what happened was Finley wasn't in Oakland anymore. He was back here in Chicago. He was running his insurance company. And what would happen is Stanley Burrell, MC Hammer, Hammer would get in the elevator and go, make way for the Veep, make way for the vice president. And he would take the, what passed for a suite, he'd take the elevator up to wherever he was, and he would report. He would tell Finley what was going on, sometimes play by play. Yeah. It was it. MC. So in 1990, he had this. He had number one album in America. I love the idea that it was a baseball related story. And there you go. That's your cultural zeitgeist. One of your pieces of history there. Best thing I saw this week? Well, the worst thing obviously was the BGA, the Bone Saw Golf Association. But golf also provided something wonderful this week. Victor Hovland, he won the Memorial. It was in Ohio. So how do you celebrate? What do you do the day after? You caddy 36 holes for your college roommate, college teammate. So Victor Hovland won a playoff Sunday at Muirfield last Sunday. And there he was on the bag for Zach Boshu, his former roommate, golf partner at Oklahoma State. They'd gone to dinner, and as the week's going on, and Zach says, "Say, why don't you do it?" "Yeah, I'll do it." "Okay." So Hovland was one shot out of the lead on Saturday. He closes with a 2-under 70 and then wins the playoff over Denny McCarthy. And then he goes out, and he's on the bag. He's caddying for his college roommate. Unfortunately, his roommate failed to qualify, so it doesn't have that happy of an ending. But I just love the idea. The guy who just won a golf tournament, he's going to go out. He's going to carry the bag for his buddy.
That's brutal. That's
but that's still great.
Oh, that's awesome, though.
That's great. This is something you could only learn from Rick Camp, who, along with Jay Zawoski, founded the I'm Fat podcast. Rick had tweeted this out. At Jay Zawoski, our calling has been found. And what it was a job summary. And it says, UW-Madison is hiring professional cheese eaters. That's what it says. The job summary says this: the Center for Dairy Research is looking for individuals passionate about all types of foods, but especially cheese, pizza, and other dairy products. Once hired, we will train you to become part of a group of expert tasters capable of verbally describing their sensory experience on the basis of appearance, texture, taste, and aroma attributes for research and product development purposes. Panelists should expect to be tasting up to 24 cheese samples and 12 pizzas a week, along with other food products. I assume, knowing Rick and Jay, having seen them, that 12 pizzas is not a week, but a day. I would assume that's the the way they work. UW-Madison is looking for professional cheese eaters.
A cheeseburger kit, fat boy.
Yeah. Yeah. Indeed. And the passing of Roger Craig, left. There's so much baseball lore in there with the Cubs, with the Sox. He was on the 1962 Mets, who went 40 and 120. He taught the split finger fastball to the likes of Bruce Sutter, Roger Craig, a baseball legend, and I think a 20 game loser in 1962. All right, Tyler Buterbaum, we got through it.
Hell yeah, we did.
The rap poll, is it still DJ Jazzy Jew? Did that win it?
It sounds like it looks, yeah. DJ Jazzy Jew lives another week.
All right, if nobody important listened to this, we'll be back next week. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It wouldn't have been possible if we weren't here to be told how much we suck. So, kudos to you guys for sucking as bad as we do.
Oh, yes. Wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Wait.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Can't touch this. You can't touch this.
Yeah!
Can't touch this. My music hits me so hard. Makes me say, oh my Lord, thank you for blessing me with a mind to run and do like this.
Can't touch this. Stanley Burrell. Welcome and welcome back. Chicago Sports Radio 670, the Score, cultural zeitgeist portion. Why are we playing that, Tyler Buterbaum?
Because today is his anniversary of when the song came out.
It was when the album, well, actually is the anniversary of when the album.
Yes, the whole album of Please Hammer, Don't Hurt Them.
Reached number one. Only the second rap album ever to reach number one in the United States. This happened in 1990. You can't touch this. MC Hammer. The story of MC Hammer is a sports story. I don't know if you know this. I don't know if our audience out there knows this, but I feel compelled to hand down this lore because MC Hammer is a baseball story. The rapper of the You Can't Touch This, Too Legit to Quit,
is this
baseball story. Because as an 11-year-old kid, he'd be doing splits and all kinds of activities in the hanging out in Oakland Coliseum parking lot. And he was noticed by Charlie Finley, the eccentric owner of the A's, who also had offices in Chicago. Charlie Finley noticed him, and the players noticed him, and the players decided he had a resemblance to Henry Aaron. You know what Henry Aaron's nickname was?
I don't believe so.
The Hammer.
Ah.
Hammer and Henry Aaron. Hammer and Hank Aaron. The Hammer. So, Finley took a liking to him. The players were amused by this 12-year-old kid, Stanley Burrell. And Stanley Burrell was made the vice president of the A's. He was basically Finley's spy. He was called Hammer, and he was Finley's spy, and then they figured it out. Then the players figured it out, because what happened was Finley wasn't in Oakland anymore. He was back here in Chicago. He was running his insurance company. And what would happen is Stanley Burrell, MC Hammer, Hammer would get in the elevator, go, make way for the Veep, make way for the vice president. And he would take the, what passed for a suite, he'd take the elevator up to wherever he was, and he would report. He would tell Finley what was going on, sometimes play by play. Yeah. It was it. MCU. So in 1990, he had this. He had number one album in America. I love the idea that it was a baseball related story. And there you go. That's your cultural zeitgeist. One of your pieces of history there. Best thing I saw this week. Well, the worst thing obviously was the BGA, the Bone Saw Golf Association. But golf also provided something wonderful this week. Victor Hovland, he won the Memorial. It was in Ohio. So how do you celebrate? What do you do the day after? You caddy 36 holes for your college roommate, college teammate. So Victor Hovland won a playoff Sunday at Muirfield last Sunday. And there he was on the bag for Zach Boshu, his former roommate, golf partner at Oklahoma State. They'd gone to dinner, and as the week's going on, and Zach says, "Say, why don't you do it?" "Yeah, I'll do it." "Okay." So Hovland was one shot out of the lead on Saturday. He closes with a 2-under 70 and then wins the playoff over Denny McCarthy. And then he goes out, and he's on the bag. He's caddying for his college roommate. Unfortunately, his roommate failed to qualify, so it doesn't have that happy of an ending. But I just love the idea. The guy who just won a golf tournament, he's going to go out. He's going to carry the bag for his buddy.
That's brutal. That's
but that's still great.
Oh, it's awesome, though.
That's great. This is something you could only learn from Rick Camp, who, along with Jay Zawoski, founded the I'm Fat podcast. Rick had tweeted this out at Jay Zawoski: "Our calling has been found." And what it was a job summary. And it says, UW-Madison is hiring professional cheese eaters. That's what it says. The job summary says this: the Center for Dairy Research is looking for individuals passionate about all types of foods, but especially cheese, pizza, and other dairy products. Once hired, we will train you to become part of a group of expert tasters capable of verbally describing their sensory experience on the basis of appearance, texture, taste, and aroma attributes for research and product development purposes. Panelists should expect to be tasting up to 24 cheese samples and 12 pizzas a week, along with other food products. I assume, knowing Rick and Jay, having seen them, that 12 pizzas is not a week, but a day. I would assume that's the the way they work. UW-Madison is looking for professional cheese eaters.
A cheeseburger kit, fat boy.
Yeah. Yeah. Indeed. And the passing of Roger Craig left, there's so much baseball lore in there with the Cubs, with the Sox. He was on the 1962 Mets, who went 40-120. He taught the split finger fastball to the likes of Bruce Sutter. Roger Craig, a baseball legend, and I think a 20-game loser in 1962. All right, Tyler Buterbaum, we got through it.
Hell yeah, we did.
The rap poll, is it still DJ Jazzy Jew? Did that win it?
It sounds like it looks, yeah. DJ
Lil
Jazzy Jew lives another
All
week.
All right, if nobody important listened to this, we'll be back next week. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It wouldn't have been possible if we weren't here to be told how much we suck. So kudos to you guys for sucking as bad as we do.
Oh, yes. Wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Wait.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
it.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. you're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of you Browns You know fans. Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.